Today on episode 25, we are back and it's Financial Literacy Month. I just want to thank all the parents, guardians, aunties, uncles, cousins, everyone who support the show and spreads the word of raising financial freedom. So we have a new schedule of every other week, and we also have a new publishing day of Saturday. We recently experienced some technical difficulties, but that's because we are experiencing growth. So now we are adjusting to the changes, and I hope you are too. So Financial Literacy Month, we're here in...
Come on, Dad. Stop playing around and play the music.
Sheesh. Tough crowd.
Have you ever wondered why some people seem to have it all financially? Do well-off parents simply hand their children money? Or is there more to this wealth thing? Welcome to Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast. We are here to talk about everything you never knew to teach your children when it comes to starting their financial future. The principles behind wealth and methods that are out there to teach your child about personal financial freedom. There is no real trick to earning other than learning. We are here to discuss, teach, and grow with you. Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast, with your host and concerned parent, Eric Yard. Let us get right into today's show.
We have some news to go over. Also, Todd Christensen is also joining us today from moneyfit.org. So let's talk about Financial Literacy Month and news going on this month. Now, here in the United States, in the month of April, organizations across the country conduct a variety of events and carry out initiatives designed to improve financial literacy. Now, the Jumpstart Coalition has been on the forefront since year 2000, I would say. Now, this used to be a day, but it grew out to a whole month. This year is a little different because of the pandemic, but there are still things going on. And in the show notes, there'll be a link to a message by Laura Levine, president and CEO of the Jumpstart Coalition, letting you know what's going on with them. In other news, Heidi Heitkamp, former North Dakota senator, was on CNBC. She had a phone interview with CNBC, and in the interview, she had a couple of things in there that really resonated with me. It's about financial literacy, basically the overall big picture of financial literacy. I'm going to play you a clip, but links to the show are going to be in the show notes where you can hear the full interview.
Senator Heitkamp, welcome. We're sorry you're not fully with us except by the phone, but we're glad to have you here nonetheless. You make some interesting points in your article about how being financially literate is not just important on its face so that you can manage your home budget more prudently and better, but that it really does ripple up through the economy in ways we really don't usually think of it. Explain what you were talking about.
Well, I mean, it's actually in two ways. First off, we're all voters. We all have to decide who's got the best economic plan, the plan that most agrees with my principles and my economic values. And if you don't understand your own personal budget, it's hard to understand, I think, how you can balance the federal budget, why you should be concerned about debt and deficit, why you should be a voter that's concerned about debt and deficit. And so I look at it for that's one side of the coin. But the other side of the coin is, the more financially literate and financially independent Americans can be, the less stress we have on government, the less problems you're going to have with people making bad choices that lead to potentially overregulation or basically bailouts. If you think about this, if they understand risk mitigation, why would anyone build a house in a floodplain? And the fewer people who build a house in the floodplain, that lowers the risk that all of us take as taxpayers in paying flood insurance. And that's just a small example. But you can look at all these choices that we make are choices not just for us and for our individual, economic well-being, but it trickles up in the economy and strengthens the American economy.
So now the mass population as a whole can change companies. The mass population can change the economy, and that's big. This reminds me of episode 8 with Ivan Inspires, where he was looking at financial literacy and wealth building. The bigger picture of it may not be realized today. Here's a clip of it.
But like, you may not be around to reap the benefits. You might be the one that just creates the foundation for your children to go ahead and build the wealth. It might not be done in one lifetime is what I'm saying. And because it might not be done in one lifetime, that does not mean it's not something you should not pursue. So like, you have to be selfless in such a way where you have that sense of, not sense, but you have to know that there's going to be a great deal of sacrifice required in order for this to happen.
So now, on a small level, your child will change financially. On the next level, your family line will change financially. And on the ultimate level, the country will change financially. And that is one of the main points we try to stress here at Raising Financial Freedom. Another article in News Today, which I already knew and is still prevalent to this day, there is a big financial literacy gap when it comes to Black Americans and whites when it comes to saving, investing, and earning and borrowing, which was just done recently by the TIAA Institute, George Washington University. So basically, financial literacy is not good in this country, but it's even worse when it comes to minorities. The article brings new numbers up to the forefront and gives an updated view of what's going on with financial literacy when it comes to minorities. The link to this article will definitely be in the show notes. Now, our guest today is Todd Christensen from MoneyFit.org, and we are going to talk about how to be MoneyFit parents and children. Welcome, everyone, to another show of Raising Financial Freedom. Today, I want to bring to you Todd Christensen. Todd. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm doing great. That's a great warm welcome.
Yeah, of course. Got to do it for the guests.
That's awesome.
So Todd, you're here with us today, and I want to talk to you about money and financial literacy, which goes, that works with money. So Todd, right, let's get a temperature of how you feel about financial literacy. Todd, in your opinion, what is the state of financial literacy in the country?
We could always do better. We're not doing so hot. There are plenty of surveys. I've been involved with Jumpstart Coalition, and they've done surveys and for years and years. And we are not doing any better than we were 10 or 15 years ago. That's the thing. We're not making much progress in spite of all the economic motivation we had with the Great Recession and pandemic. But we could always do better.
And you said that you work with Jumpstart?
I've been involved in the state chapter leadership here in Idaho, and work with quite a bit of the other state leaders around the country.
Oh, wow. Can you explain a little what Jumpstart is?
Jumpstart, it's the Jumpstart Coalition for Personal Financial Literacy. And it was organized back in the mid to late 90s with the purpose of promoting financial literacy among young people especially. But each state has their own chapter and can focus on school children or adults or teacher training, whatever they choose. But the whole purpose is to promote financial literacy. There's a lot of big banks and brokers that are behind it and want to see financial literacy grow.
Definitely. As an organization, I hope to get on the show and able to talk to somebody.
Absolutely.
They are definitely the leaders to financial literacy. So hypothetically, in a semi-perfect world, how would financial literacy be implemented?
Okay, so there's a lot of push in some places to acquire it in schools, and I think that would really be helpful. It's certainly not going to hurt. There are really, over the last 20 years, I think there have only been 3 states, maybe 4, that require any kind of personal financial literacy class for graduation from high school. Others, another 10, 20, have standards, but how those standards are implemented, it's hit and miss. The real work for financial literacy has to be done at home. Kids can learn it. There's studies that show that they can learn it in a classroom, but it's the success will come from learning it and seeing it in their home. But the challenge, as you likely know, is that most parents are not comfortable talking to their children about money. They've made a lot of mistakes, haven't we all? And think that they're not qualified and don't know where to start and are embarrassed or just overwhelmed with the idea. And so we did our own surveys at MoneyFit, as we've done hundreds and hundreds of classes over the years in high schools, and asked high school students, have you talked to your parents about money, and when was the last time? And we found that 80% said, about 1,000 responses, that they had never spoken with their parents about money other than, can I have some? That's about it.
Can I?
And the response is always, no, we don't have any.
Wow, that's amazing. So when you were growing up, what financial literacy lessons did your parents pass on to you?
My parents were great examples of financial literacy. They were very frugal with their money. I'm the youngest mm-hmm. of eight, so they had to be. But I remember going shopping with my mom and grocery shopping and, of course, seeing everything that looked yummy and delicious. Can I have that? And it was, that's not what we're here for, that we've got to get, we're here to get groceries. And my dad owned his own practice. He's an optometrist, and he was hard worker, and I was in his office, quite often in his office working. So the financial literacy lessons I learned was that you can be rewarded for hard work and running your own business, and you need to take care of your spending. They did, but when I was coming of age and heading off to college was the first time really in the early to mid 80s, the first time when credit card companies really started marketing hard to college students. My parents had no idea that this was happening. So we had not really had any conversations about credit cards. I didn't know how they worked. And so when I got to college, and of course, hey, you get it, sign up for a free credit card, we'll give you this free t-shirt or a Frisbee or a hat. And I got my first credit card, $2,000 credit limit. It arrived, I think, on a Wednesday morning, and by Thursday evening, I had it maxed out. So it was not that they weren't good with it. My parents weren't good with it, or that they didn't think I should know about it. They just didn't know it was an issue on college campuses. None of my older brothers had encountered that, or my sister, and so it was something new. But it's just a matter of staying aware of what's going on as they're heading off for a little independence.
Yeah, that is definite. Those cards could get you in trouble. So
yeah.
With those lessons being taught to you, what has trickled down to your kids?
We have made it a point to be very open with our finances, with our kids. Previous generations, and not necessarily my folks, but I know previous generations from the classes that I teach, if they were to ask their mother or their father, hey, how much money do you make? The answer seemed inevitably to be none of your business. And so we talk to our kids and we share and we say, look, this is our family finances. So we're going to share information, but we keep it here at home. But with our two older children, when they were 8 years, starting about the time they were six and eight, we did it three or four times every couple of years. We'd pull out Monopoly money and we would count out, this is how much money, we put it on the table. This is how much money we earn every month. And of course you put down $100 and they think, whoa, we're rich. But we would get to put that pile out there, and their eyes would be so big. They think, this is awesome. Look, we get to go to Disney World or something. And then we'd start talking about, okay, first thing we got to do is we're going to pay taxes even before we see our money. We're going to pay taxes, and this is what we get for taxes. We didn't want to make it negative, but these are the things that the government provides through some of these tax money. Yeah. Here's some of the benefits that I have to pay for at work. And we talk about generosity and our tithing. We talk about rent, and they teach him about, yeah, we have to pay for this house. We're still paying for this house and utilities. And we would go through and let them know where every dollar was going. Here's money that goes into savings. Here's money that's for allowance so that they see that they're taken care of. And so by the end of this activity, it could take 10 minutes. It can take 25 minutes, depending on the discussion. There was $1 left on the counter or on the table. And those older kids, they really never asked us for money again because they knew that we had a plan and that every dollar was accounted for. And that if they were going to get some money, they were probably going to have to ask or figure out how to earn it themselves.
That's amazing. You're using the money, the Monopoly money to teach them. Were there any games that other games that
we We did have, my wife found, and I didn't realize this, my wife found a version of The Game of Life that, and I'd been teaching personal finance for 5 or 10 years. And it was very different from the one I grew up with. It was very realistic. And I thought, oh, this, they've changed it. It's not so much chance and it's not these wild numbers, earn $20,000 for selling some painting that's, you know, it was realistic. And so I said, hey, I think we'd seen it at somebody's house. I said, so let's get one. And we bought a version of it and it was completely different. But that sort of game, I remember playing that wherever we were. We played it 2 or 3 times during that visit and loved that. But I've also got a couple other games that I've used over the years at work. I think Payday is one of them. And there was a game by Robert Kiyosaki that we've played with groups of kids.
Oh, really? I didn't even know he had a game. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about moneyfit.org. How is it helping the people out there? And what's it all about?
Sure. MoneyFit is the name of our organization is Debt Reduction Services, but we also have this DBA, MoneyFit, because it tells more of what we do. It's all about helping people stabilize their finances and create a secure future. We're a nonprofit, been around since 96. And what I do as the education manager is I have gone into the community and led about 2,000 workshops on the basics of personal finance, from budgeting, credit building, debt elimination, saving for emergencies, protecting your identity, how to spend, be a savvy consumer. And we've created some online programs as well that it was great. There was no good time with the pandemic, but we had already pivoted to do a lot of online courses in the fall of 2019. So most all our education is now available for free online to help people have a good, positive experience, seeing what budgeting is like, or learning about busting some of the myths about credit, and just helping people if they need help with debt, providing a debt management plan. But as a nonprofit, we're an education charter, so we're all about educating.
Your clients, what have you seen that is a common problem?
It's all over the board. I guess you could say, if you wanted to generalize, it's typically a homeowning couple with a couple of kids that have maybe got into too much credit card debt or had a medical emergency and struggled with that to pay their bills, or they've just let some bills go and their credit card interest rates are now in 20, 30% interest, which I've seen as high as 60% on some credit cards, these default or penalty rates. And so we're able to work with those creditors and get them down to 2, 3, 5, 8% interest rates so they can get paid off in 5 years. But it's all over the board, from medical to just overspending to job loss, and people are getting back into employment. Now they need to figure out how to address all the debt that they were building during that unemployed period.
Todd, how did you get started in all this, and why did you get started?
I did not grow up thinking I'm going to be education manager at a nonprofit. That's not a typical or traditional career route anyone chooses. I'd actually started taking over a business for a mentor of mine. He was helping him appraise dental practices. Again, not something traditional. And so I was in the middle of working a business. It was a kind of a feast or famine type, where you can go 4 or 5 months without any income and then make all your annual income in 1 or 2 transactions. When my wife and I got married and she was employed, and I was in the middle of one of those famines and things weren't going well at her work. And so I said, let me just go temporarily get a full-time job and until things turn around. And I found this job. One of the small percentages actually finds it online. And after about a month, I realized, you know what? I don't want to go back. This is so what I love to do. And teaching and helping people stabilize their finances and promoting basic financial literacy. And then dealing and getting there and helping with kids. You go into a classroom and you talk to kids about money, and they help them understand, you know, there's only 4 things you can do with money. You can earn it, you can spend it, you can give it, and you can save it. And by the end of that classroom, they feel so empowered. I know what I can do with money now. It's a lot of fun.
Especially when you see their faces start to understand what money is all about and how is it applying and how it works in the economy.
Right.
They get a true understanding of, hey, I just can't go spending.
Yeah, I go into classes as young as, I've been into kindergarten classes, but second grade is really a great time, all the way up through high school and college and beyond, of course. But those second graders, if I go back and do a second or third presentation, they see me coming, Mr. C is here. They just, it just makes my day. And it's hard to picture myself doing anything else.
I understand. Your kids got a little advantage on them then.
Hopefully it's not going to be the case of the cobbler's kids have no shoes. We try and be open with them. And I was listening in on one of my 15-year-old was doing, going through a review for a scout merit badge. And they talked, one of the questions was about money. And boy, I was really impressed. He actually was listening. He had actually been listening when we were telling him about how credit works and debt and all that. So it's working on the cognitive level. Hopefully in practice, it's always wait and see how that goes.
Yeah. Let's see the fruits of your labor. Did it take?
Exactly.
With all your teaching that you do, what is the one thing that people don't realize about money?
About money generally? That's a loaded question, right? I think a misunderstanding about the role of debt in our lives is probably, in my mind, one of the biggest issues in our society. We have just come to expect that their debt is just a normal thing. You have to have a car loan. How could you? Some people haven't even considered buying a car without a car loan. They just assume, oh, I got to have a car loan. And we've been raised, hopefully we've been even lucky enough to hear this, but even if we've heard the idea that there's good debt and bad debt, that can cause problems. We saw that in the Great Recession. Good debt was always traditionally home loans or mortgages, possibly business loans and student loans. If we've learned anything in the last 15 years, you can get into a home loan that is way too big for what you can afford, and you can get into way too much student loan debt than what your plans will for a career are going to really justify. Going to a private, very expensive liberal arts because you want to go into a very noble profession, but that pays minimal. It's not going to be the best financial choice. Now, I'm not saying there's not value in non-finances, but I'd like to change that paradigm from good debt, bad debt to potentially good debt, because it is potentially beneficial debt. There's practical debt. I use a credit card and I pay it off every month. That has its negatives too, with overspending. And then there's everything else is just bad debt. But I think the idea that we just, it's just the way of life. That's like fingernails on a chalkboard. And when I hear that.
With there being major points in financial literacy, I'll pick some. There's earning, there's saving, there's investing, and then there's budgeting. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick one, which one would you pick to shout out loud to the world?
Savings, hands down. If we could all just save something first, pay ourselves first. A lot of people have heard that terminology. You got to pay yourself first. But when I get to them one-on-one, they say, I don't know what that means. It simply means put something into your savings before you pay your bills. If we could actually build an emergency savings fund, every household could build an emergency savings fund. And we've really seen this skyrocket in the last year during the pandemic. And it actually happens every time we go into recession. Everybody pulls back their spending and builds their savings. But if we could just do that consistently, think about all the things that would change in our economy. Yes, there would be some companies and businesses that we would no longer need payday loans. Not that other than the employees, most people wouldn't miss that. But we wouldn't have to worry so much if the appliance, a refrigerator breaks down, because we'd have some savings to be able to go buy it, not put it on a credit card and pay 20% extra in interest every year. So savings, hands down, that would cure a lot of problems. Yeah, there's some challenges with income. There, we do have some income differences, but even the lowest income have been improving versus the lowest income 20, 40, 800 years ago. But when we compare it to the highest income, that's where we all, it drives us crazy. But most problems, and I'm not all, but most household financial problems that I've seen are spending issues, not income issues, because we expect a certain lifestyle in this country, And when we see neighbors or people on TV have a certain lifestyle, and we feel, I'm not going to say entitled, but we feel it's unfair because somebody who's earning low income can work harder than people who are making massive amounts of income, physically, even emotionally or mentally. But if we could save first, our spending would automatically, just naturally fit into our income.
Interesting. Me personally, I think it's budgeting because I think everything falls under that heading, which is savings, investing.
Yeah, I can understand that. And that's really, it is the same thing. If we would budget savings first, then all that planning for all our spending, we would just make it fit within our income after that.
Yeah, I would say budgeting, but I still have a love for the investing part. So.
Yeah, I'm definitely not dissing budgeting. I teach it all the time. I wouldn't want to say do this and not do that. They are all part of our household finances.
So how do you feel when you are able to help one of your clients from going the wrong way to the right way?
Yeah. Those are some of the best days. I have a number of experiences, but I remember one couple, I'd met them in a community workshop I was doing at a local church, and they came up to me afterwards and said, "We need to come talk to you. We'd like to buy a house, but we have so much debt and our credit is so terrible that we don't know what to do." And so we made an appointment. They came up a week or two later, brought a little baby in their carrier and sat her there on the next to them. And we said, "Okay, let's pull your credit report." Talk, because they've already shared their goals with me. And they found out that all that debt that they were worried about and had been losing sleep about and their terrible credit they were scared of was so old that it was beyond statute of limitations for being sued in court for it. And it was no longer on their credit. And their credit it wasn't golden, but it certainly wasn't bad. But it was good enough that I said, "Look, you guys got this income now. And you're wanting to buy a home. If you take care of this debt and that debt," and they did. In the next 2 to 3 months, they really buckled down and got rid of a couple of big debts. I said, "Why don't you do that? Probably time for you to start thinking about contacting a mortgage broker." And ran into them 2 months later, and they were getting ready to close on a house. It was just one of the best days of work, my career. It was fun to hear that sort of thing.
Yeah, that sounds good, because you basically show them that, hey, all the bad things that you did financially really is gone right now, and your credit score really isn't that bad of how you think, and you bring that light to them.
Right.
And I knew that they were so happy. So you definitely didn't even have much work to do.
No, it's annualcreditreport.com. It's free. We didn't have to pay anything. It's just something that takes 10 minutes and 5 minutes. And we looked it over and I said, "Okay, now what debts are you worried about? Because I'm not seeing them." And they said, "Well, it's been 10 years or 12 years or 15 years. Yeah, it was just fun because they came in, there was just this darkness, this fear. I could feel it. And as soon as we're done looking at the credit report, they leaned back and you could feel the stress just leave. And there was an excitement and a hope there that was not there before.
Wow. That's good. Yeah. That's good. That's real good.
Yeah.
So Todd, I'm going to jump into your other hat. You are an author. You're an author. And you're an author of Everyday Money for Everyday People.
Yes.
Now that book speaks to, I would say, to the 9-to-5ers out there.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about the book?
Absolutely. Sure. I had been at MoneyFit Debt Reduction Services for almost 10 years. And I had led almost 1,000 community workshops. And inevitably, you're going to hear a lot of stories, but you're also going to hear a lot of really interesting, different new ideas that you'd never heard of on how to manage your debt and success stories and so forth. And every time I'd hear one of these, somebody would share in one of these classes, I'd say, "Oh, that is such a good idea. Somebody ought to write a book." And pretty soon it clicked. Oh, if I'm the one they're telling the stories to, I better write the book about it. So I joined an author's group here in town, the local publisher, and just started writing down the stories that I'd heard, and included a lot of my own personal experiences with personal finance, and kept trying to figure out, okay, what do I want to name the book? And I think it was early one morning. I'd just gotten up and it just came, Everyday Money for Everyday People, because that is what it is. Everyday people need better information. They're not getting it about how money works. They're not getting it from their parents. They're not getting it from schools. What does that leave? And it goes, if they go online and ask questions, can they really trust somebody? So it's just been really gratifying to see the response over the last seven years since it came out.
Todd, what is the best piece of financial advice you could give any child or any parent?
Best piece of advice, just don't give up. Don't give up finance. There's so many problems that are going to arise. Best informed, best financially educated people are still going to struggle with something. We've had our own struggles. You know, we continue to have struggles. And it's so easy to just say, okay, this is where we have been, this is where we are, and this is all where we're always going to be. But if you can set some goals, if you know where you'd like to be, just don't give up. You'll get there. I wrote another book, just published it earlier this year, 50 Plus on Fire. It's for those of us in our 50s who still would like to achieve financial independence and still have dreams of using our time in our late 50s and 60s to go beyond the 9-to-5 and maybe do some volunteering and create a financially independent life that allows us to do more than punch the clock day in, day out. And that's that, again, manifestation of the hope that if there's something else you want to do, more you want to do, just don't give up. Keep going for it.
Yeah. You was forced on the hamster wheel, but you can get off. You definitely can get off.
Yeah, right. Yeah, this is what we're taught in schools. And I mean, I love schools. I love my degrees. But it's not it doesn't give us all the options out there for career and for what we want to do with our lives.
Yeah, basically to be taught to be a cog in the wheel.
Yeah, it sometimes feels that way. And some cogs are bigger than others and some cogs are smoother than others. But sometimes it can feel like we're just part of a machine. And so when the idea of, if you've heard of FIRE, financial independence, retire early, this movement the idea has been around forever, but it's really taken off, caught fire in the early 2010s, late 2000s, that you can build your own financial independence outside of your career so that you can do what you want with your time that's most value to you and to society.
That's good. That's definitely good. Todd, if you had to do it all over again, what is the first thing you would do?
I would tell myself to stop comparing what I had with what everybody else had. I remember being at college and looking out the window. I was on the second or third floor, looking out the window and seeing a friend drive in on a brand new two-door sports car, a Ford Probe. That tells you how old I am. And I thought, oh, that's what I want. And you start seeing what others have and you start wanting what others have. And so you start spending based on what others have rather than on what you have and want. And so I really had a problem with overspending. That was my problem growing up or when I was younger. Just to be satisfied with my priorities and have a goal of where I want to go and how to get there. But just set up a plan on how to get there.
Todd, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing all this good knowledge with us.
You bet. I appreciate the opportunity.
Let us know where we can get in touch with you and continue this conversation and what future projects you got going on in the future.
Yeah, my MoneyFit is just moneyfit.org. And I would love it to be able to share some more of their financial literacy projects that we do in schools. One on Berenstain Bears that's just fun and free for teachers. But yeah.
What about Financial Literacy Month coming up just now? You have anything special going on?
April. I love April, Financial Literacy Month. There's every state. I know Jumpstart, as I mentioned before, is big into Financial Literacy Month. And a lot of state governors will have a proclamation signing. Here in Idaho, we actually, the Jumpstart does an annual piggy bank beauty contest where kids third to sixth grade can submit a piggy bank of their own making, and then it gets voted on, and they can win some money for the 529 plan here in Idaho, and then they get to meet the governor. It's just, there's so many opportunities out there. Every state does something different. Get involved. That's a great opportunity.
All right, Todd. Once again, I want to thank you for coming on the show. What I've taken out of this episode and this show, let's prioritize some of our time towards financial literacy. We make time for a whole slew of other things, but for this month, especially this month, let's try to prioritize more time for financial literacy. Let's take our kids to the local event, whether it's online or offline, or take them to the library or buy them some books. Or better yet, just sit down and have a talk with them about money. Plain and simple as that. Keep it simple at the beginning, but then build on that. I will have a link in the show notes for 10 free financial tools available during this financial literacy month. So come on now, you can do this. Better yet, we can do this. Stay tuned to next episode where we'll be talking to another organization who is definitely pushing the envelope in financial literacy. Until next time, stay safe.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast. Stay connected with us directly through raisingfinancialfreedom.com. You can also join the discussion on social media, which you can also find links on our website. If you would like to speak with us, please send us an email through info@raisingfinancialfreedom.com. And as always, thank you for pushing your mindset towards a better reality. This concludes the most thought-provoking portion of your day. Don't forget to please like and subscribe to stay fully up to date. Until next time, be kind to yourself and each other.